I'm David Ford, and it's time to pick up our opera glasses now. The American Singers Opera Project, ASOP, kicked off last weekend with free aria evenings at Arbor Acres in Salem Town in Winston-Salem. The two-week-long program concludes this year with performances of Mozart's Magic Flute, sung in German, with English dialogue and chamber orchestra. Artistic director, American soprano, and assistant professor of music at University of Central Oklahoma, Barbara DeMaio Caprilli, and Wake Forest University professor of music, lyric tenor Richard Hurd, spoke with me about it.
Well, one of the things I was surprised to learn as a pedagogue is that the only thing that affects the sound of the voice, the way the voice sounds, actually, is the pharynx and the size of the mouth. All of the nasal passages that everyone talks about, they just do sympathetic vibrations. But the only thing that actually changes the way the voice sounds is the pharynx, that's a little over 90%, and the shape of the mouth.
And you say pharynx, and I'm thinking of the Sphinx in Egypt. What's a pharynx? And my dad was in...
The pharynx is this part right here.
And you're reaching for... And this is for the radio now, Barbara. So you've got to really spell this out for me.
Basically, think throat.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The vocal filter is what changes the sound of the voice. So everything from the vocal folds up to the lips.
Okay. American Singers Opera Project, ASOP. How did it begin?
It began in New York City and was founded by Nancy Stokes Milnes, who was my voice teacher, with the idea that it was going to copy kind of the thing that Boris Goldovsky used to do with his opera workshop. And the idea is to give singers of all different levels, not just beginners, absolutely all different levels, an opportunity to sing roles that they want to sing.
For those not in the know, Stokes Milnes, a famous name in the world of singing and obviously a famous association with a husband who knew how to sing a tune or two.
Yeah, Nancy Stokes Milnes was the wife of Cheryl Milnes at the time I met her. She is no longer the wife of Cheryl Milnes. He's on his third wife now. But she was with him through much of his career and is a singer herself and was trained in Italy. She had a Fulbright grant and went to Italy to train. Followed Cheryl throughout his career and was the one that gave him notes and helped him when he was making recordings. And one day she decided that she wanted to start coaching roles. And I was coaching roles with her in New York. And then one day she turned to me and said, "I'm tired of putting Band-Aids on problems. I want to start teaching voice." I was one of her first students.
What was your takeaway from your association with her in those lessons? A pearl of wisdom or two that you've taken with you?
Nancy was the first person that I ever met that talked about how the voice is created. So she would be an early proponent of what we now call functional voice training, so that it's not just, you know, pink bubbles and blue numbers or whatever that people talk about, the visualizations. She actually would talk about what the larynx was doing and what the vocal filter was doing. And she's the first person that I really kind of thought, oh, that's why this works. And it really set me on the path, which has brought me to the doctorate that I now have.
That's interesting. I was talking to Ryu Goto, Midori's kid brother, like mm-hmm. 17 years her junior, and he was talking about how important it was for him studying physics, the physics of the violin, and then internalizing the movements, and it really helped him with avoid injury and moving forward with the instrument. I never really considered that. But
we're in the same place now with voice science that sports science was about 20 years ago. And so there are new discoveries being made every day. I went to the Voice Foundation last year and heard some fascinating topics, and it's helping us keep singers healthy longer.
That's something a lot of folks don't realize, Richard, and from my generation studying in a kind of conservatory setting, music injury is something that's kind of, for years, has been kind of pushed aside. But you've got real concerns, I mean, as a teacher, teaching students to sing in a healthy way.
Exactly. I mean, I have to counsel them a lot of times about staying healthy vocally and what to do and what not to do, you know, to avoid injury to the singing voice. And some of them don't really understand what they need to do to stay healthy.
What are some common things that they're doing wrong?
Singing off the breath, singing off the body, as we both would advocate. Singing incorrectly, not supporting the voice.
Is off the breath, what does that mean?
It's not singing with diaphragmatic effort, with diaphragmatic energy.
When you say diaphragmatic, what are you talking about?
I think it's engaging, you know, all those muscles, intercostal muscles, lower support, and just really letting that help you to support your voice.
Babies,
basically, air has to go over the vocal folds to make them vibrate. And when you're talking about a classical sound as compared to a contemporary commercial music sound like belting or musical theater or pop, rock, you need more air because the classical sound is more acoustically efficient. So you can hear a classical sound without a microphone. And for that reason, it needs more air to actually vibrate in the right way. And not only that, there are a lot of people sing with a lot of neck and tongue tension. That's one of the major things you see in American singers. And that type of thing can also get in the way of making a healthy sound. And I love, we have Lita Scarce, who comes from the Voice Foundation at Duke every year. And she always talks about how to sing on a vocal clock so that you're making sure that you don't sing full out all the time. It's a fascinating talk on vocal health, and our singers always get a lot out of it. But it's a difficult thing because people say vocal abuse. Well, vocal abuse, as Lita likes to say, we don't say knee abuse when a football player or a basketball player hurts their knee. What happens is sometimes singers get injured. It's because it's a very high-contact sport. And no matter how good your technique is, sometimes things happen. And we often talk about how the back opens when you're taking a breath, that all of those intercostal muscles take the ribs and open them up. And then the Italians call it singing in apnea, singing while holding your breath, so that you sing with that chest open in that position, and the diaphragm stays down, and the air comes out of the lungs more efficiently.
My thanks to American Singers Opera Project Artistic Director, American soprano Barbara DiMaio Caprilli, and Wake Forest University Professor of Music, lyric tenor Richard Hurd. The two-week-long program concludes this year with performances of Mozart's Magic Flute. It'll be sung in German with English dialogue and chamber orchestra June 12th through the 14th at 7 o'clock in Brendel Recital Hall on the Wake Forest University campus. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, that's all for today's show. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. And our intern is Michaela Nance. If you missed part of today's show, you'll find it along with archived episodes, podcasts, photos, and more at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you've got questions, comments, or suggestions, please drop us an email to triadarts@wfu.edu. You'll also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Triad Arts Speak. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.